Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Sales Team Pro Sunday Fundamentals Training. My name is Kristen, and I'm excited to tell you that tonight we are live with a brand new training covering how to understand Social Security, and more importantly, how to help your clients understand Social Security. The big Sales Team Pro Nashville Conference is less than 2 weeks away, and I'm so excited to meet everybody, but I have to tell you that tomorrow, October 4th, is the final day to reserve your room at the Opryland Hotel under our discounted block of rooms. And that's at $179 a night. Typically, it's over $400 a night. So make sure if you haven't reserved the place you're staying in Nashville yet, get that booked ASAP. We also have our Sales Team Pro kickoff this coming Saturday, October 9th, starting at 8 a.m. Pacific. We have an awesome panel of speakers that are going to teach you how to do 9 months worth of business in the next 3 months to make sure that you finish your quarter strong. Your host tonight has been in the business over 37 years. He's a $500,000 a year earner with 86 licensed reps and over $73 million of personal assets under management. Give it up for the awesome Dave Deal.
Thanks, Kristen. All right. Well, good evening, everybody. Tonight, we're going to take a little different slant on it. We've got some good education for you, but we're going to actually show you the Understanding Social Security seminar that we ran. And so we're going to do it from beginning to end so that you get a chance to see a couple things. Number one, you'll get all the information that we have for Social Security. But at the same time, you're going to see how we incorporated it into one of our asset strategy seminars that we do. We do a series of seminars each year, typically on a quarterly basis. And we like to, you know, switch up the topics because besides, you know, whatever's trending at the time in the market, we try to, give our clients some great information as well. And what you start to build in your business is a following. And so we've been doing these quarterly seminars most of the time in person, but the last certainly year and a half, we've been doing it as a webinar. And we'll continue for now that way, but you can do it either way. And if you're gonna do the seminars in person, one of the things I encourage you to do, number one, is to set the date for your first one or your next one, whatever it is. If you wanna make it a theme like we have for, we've been doing it since every quarter since 1998. And, your clients start to get into that. In fact, they start inviting people to it. They go, when's the next one? Tell me when the next one. Well, we're pretty good at getting the word out and of getting that done. So you're going to see that tonight. So I'll apologize ahead of time for the opening because it's our typical opening in Primerica. So just bear with us as we get this thing going. But it gets us into the rhythm, and then you'll see how we transition into it. And the second thing I would encourage you to do is if you're going to sell out to them, is make it part of your culture. You know, I know we've been talking a lot about culture with Roy on Tuesdays. He's building, you know, a marketing culture. It's probably the best training I've been a part of in my 38 years. And so it's so important to find your voice, find what you're going to identify with most of all. So let me share my screen and we'll get this thing started. So this one was called Understanding Social Security. And as we get started here, all right, hopefully y'all can see it. Kurt, can you see it?
You can see it.
Okay, thanks, Krista. All right, so, we certainly let them know that it's an honor for us to have them tonight. And it's our way of giving back. And one of the things we like to share with our clients here is the fact that we want them to be part of it. We found that clients that participate in their own financial experience get better results. Why? Because they care more. They get more informed, they stay informed, and also they brag about it to their friends whose broker hasn't called them, you know, since before COVID. So it's a good thing for that. After the presentation, we'll hope you see that we care about helping families. we care about doing what's right, and that we have concepts that could bring value to you and those that you care about. So as we know, at Primerica, we're listed on the New York Stock Exchange. We are the largest independent financial services marketing organization in North America. So who we are, y'all know this. We've been in business since 1977. But here's the key, the one company focused on Main Street, who needs us obviously the most. And of course, our companies, you know, Zach Research called Primerica the Amazon of Wall Street, because we partner with so many big corporations that want part of our business. They want relationships with us. So we're able to bring those solutions to the world, mostly middle America. And our most recent one, as it's highlighted there, is Rocket Mortgage, which I can't wait till y'all get to have that in your state. We just opened up, I believe it was in December of last year. And so it's been a great ride so far. Okay. And then of course, we've been awarded from AM Best's A+ Superior rating to the Best Employer for Women, to our Dalbar Award, more on the next page. And then we were on the Forbes. We didn't even know they were doing a study in 2015. It's the last time they've done it. But we were among the top 50 America's most trustworthy financial companies. And we were number one in the middle, mid-cap space for that. And currently, I believe in counting, we have now 18 in a row now for the Dalbar Award. All right, so we all know about our challenges that we work with people on. 47% of workers and or their spouses have less than $25,000 in total savings, not gonna get to their retirement. And folks, that's less than half of America. We all know that. And then less than half of workers report they have not tried to calculate how much money they're gonna need, which they aren't even anywhere close to on track. The rest of them, hopefully, they've gotten a good handle on that. And that's why only 18% of workers surveyed said that they felt very confident about having enough money to live comfortably through retirement. So how does that translate? What do we do, you know, different? Well, there's three basic investment phases in your life. And so we have the accumulation phase, which is really saving for retirement is typically the focus. Yes, you can have other things as well, like a house you're saving for. You know, college education, but that typically happens between 18 and 55. And then it gets real serious. You don't want the money that you've saved to go anywhere. So we go into a protection phase, which we'll talk about that tonight as well. And that's between age 55 and 65, where you're really preparing for retirement. And then of course you get into age 65 plus, where retirement income is big. And we're gonna really focus on that tonight as one of the main income streams still in most people's retirement is Social Security. So we're gonna talk about that a lot tonight. We've got a great speaker, Kurt Diehl, following me. And he's gonna really delve into that and give you some great food for thought and examples. But that's really, I'll talk about what the buckets are, 1, 2, and 3 after Kurt's done. But it's really now distribution of income, distribution of assets, and then ultimately wealth transfer, which we'll end the night with here. So with that, I will turn it over to Kurt and let him take us away from there.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Excited to be here tonight. Honored to be here tonight. We're going to go through Franklin Templeton's Social Security slide deck. And obviously this part here, we don't say when we're in front of the clients, but I want you all to know that, you know, even if you don't use Franklin Templeton, I highly encourage you to, whoever you use, dive into their website and then dive into other fund companies that we have partnerships with and dive into their website, because what you'll find is that each of them have their own niche. Each of them have something that they specialize in, and you'll learn a lot. You'll get some really great presentations from them and some education. So one of the things that Franklin's very good at is the Social Security space. They have a specialist there named Gail Buckner that has become a national advocate for Social Security. She speaks on various different television shows, radio shows, podcasts, et cetera. And so she's a leading expert on that. And she's really who has put together these Social Security presentations. And so we're going to dive into the Securing Social Security presentation tonight. Hopefully you all can see my screen. As we get into this here, let me just jump into it. I want to take you through a brief history of Social Security, because I think you're going to be able to see then just exactly, you know, where it's come from and why we're in the situation that we're in now. You know, so first off, the payroll tax rate, back when it was shortly after it was created, in 1940 was 2%. So the payroll tax rate really effectively being how much of our income is going towards Social Security to help fund it. So at that point in time, 2% of our income was going towards Social Security. Fast forward to today, and 12.4% of our income goes towards Social Security. The earnings cap, and effectively what the earnings cap is what's the maximum amount of our income are we allowed to have go towards Social Security? So in 1940, $3,000 was the earnings cap. So everything from $0 to $3,000 was hit with that 2% payroll tax. Everything you made after $3,000 didn't get hit with that payroll tax for Social Security. Now, fast forward to 2021, and that number has gone up to $142,000. So everything from zero to 142 gets hit with Social Security taxes. Beyond that number does not. Now, just looking at those two stats alone, you might sit there and think, gee, Social Security seems like it's probably in pretty good shape if you didn't know what was going on with Social Security, because they're taxing us more and they're taxing more of our income. So clearly it must be in a much better shape. But you all know the story. You all know there's some struggles with Social Security. So let's talk about why. First, here is total beneficiaries. Back in 1940, 222,000 people were beneficiaries of Social Security. Today, 69 million people are beneficiaries of Social Security. And part of that has to do with some changes that they've made over the years, because initially it didn't cover the same things that it covers today. They've added things like, you know, children who are disabled or, you know, children of the disabled, et cetera. So they've added some things that they didn't cover originally. Next is, you know, how many workers are going to support each beneficiary. So in 1940, 159 workers gave their taxes, had their money taxed to support one person on Social Security. Today, that's dropped down to less than 3 to 1. So they have significantly more beneficiaries and significantly less workers supporting each beneficiary. And then not only that, the average retiree benefit went from $22.60 per month in 1940 to a whopping $1,500 a month. Now, when I first saw this stat, I just thought to myself, well, gee, that was 1940, you know, 80 years ago. This is clear. It's clear just because of inflation. That's why it went higher. But I decided to go and do the math on that. And you can find inflation calculators right online if you go to Google. Based off of the cost of living indexes and whatnot, that $22.60 per month would be $441 per month today. So it's not just inflation that made the average retiree benefit go up. It was significantly more than that. So we have a lot more money going to our beneficiaries, which is a lot more people and less people supporting each beneficiary. So that's kind of gives you an idea of where we've come from to where we are today and kind of why we're in the mess that we're in. So if we're going to go and look at what Social Security is, it can really be boiled down into these three different parts. First, it's a government-sponsored entity. So because it's a government-sponsored program, the nice thing about that is that we know it's backed by the full faith of the U.S. government. Now, whether or not you love the government is one thing, but at the end of the day, they're the ones who are backing this program. So that's a good thing in the eyes of who's sponsoring your retirement program. It's inflation adjusted, meaning that each year as the cost of living adjusts, so does the income. And then lastly, it's a lifetime retirement income. All right, so let's talk about what it looks like today, because we know that there's some concerns over it. And you'll see on this chart here, there's kind of a busy chart, but if you just follow the storyline here, you'll kind of understand what we're looking at. You know, it was about 2010 where the money that was coming in, which is this green line, was exceeded by the money going out, which is this blue line here. And that's really what caught the media's attention. It sounded the alarms. They said, you know, hey, the sky is falling. There's no way that Social Security is going to be able to stay afloat based on that math. And truly, they're right. You know, there's going to be some issues here. So they've been able to sell bonds to help make up the difference. And they have a trust fund that they're pulling from to help make up that difference. So to this date, nobody has missed a Social Security benefit. They're still receiving that. Nobody's missed a payment. There haven't been any issues. Now, if you look, continue on the story here, our income stays roughly about the same. The cost, though, right around 2035, you'll notice that this blue line drops off and it comes to match and equal this green line for the income. And we've got this dashed orange line, which, as you'll see, says scheduled but not fully payable benefits, meaning that this is what people were promised. But effectively, we've run out of money. You'll see here that payable benefits income after the trust fund depletion in 2035. So what they basically are saying is, hey, listen, we can keep Social Security afloat, but to do so, we need to reduce the payable benefits and basically take every dollar that comes into Social Security and send it right back out to somebody else that needs it, some beneficiary. And that's what you're seeing happening here. We reduce the benefits that are payable to match the income that's coming in. And by doing that, clearly they're gonna stay afloat. It's just we may not get exactly what we were promised. And if you look at this chart down here, you will see from 2020 to 2034, we've got 100% of our scheduled benefits to pay out that are paid out. Starting 2035, what's scheduled to happen is it's looking to reduce to about 80%, and then you'll see even down to 75% beyond that in 2093. Now, don't get me wrong. Congress can make changes at any point in time, and they have done so in the past. And here's the reality. In order to make the changes, in fact, let me move forward to this next slide because it's gonna, I think, help us figure out what we can do here. You'll see for the 75-year projection period, the actuarial deficit is 3.21% of taxable payroll. This is 15% larger than last year's report. Now, what does that mean? Well, effectively, all that means is to fix this problem, a 1.6% from the employer and a 1.6% from the employee in taxes fixes the issue. Now, most people won't even notice an extra 1.6% coming out of their paycheck. Now, nobody likes to spend more on taxes, but that's literally all it would be to fix the whole entire issue. Now, the problem we have here is that every administration for quite some time has kind of kicked the can down the road here. And no one really wants to be the politician in office that says, we're going to go ahead and raise taxes to fix this issue. However, 2035 is right around the corner. And there's not going to be a politician that's going to want to be in office that says, hey, we need to reduce everybody's Social Security benefits. So somewhere, if I had to bet, I would assume somewhere between now and 2035, they're going to have to tackle this issue. Now, everything that's been proposed so far really addresses those that are not yet relying on Social Security and have years to go before they're ever going to. So they've proposed a bunch of different things. You know, if you remember that income gap, the wage cap, how much they can tax your Social Security on, they've talked about increasing that. They've talked about possibly increasing the percentage that you're paying for Social Security. They've talked about changing the age that you're allowed to your full retirement age for Social Security. So they've proposed a bunch of different things, but most of those things really affect those that are not getting close to counting on Social Security and have time to prepare for it. Now, if I go back to this slide here, you're going to notice something. There's an asterisk here right here. And that shows down at the bottom here, projections do not reflect the potential impact of COVID-19. So what does that mean? Well, we know that a lot happened last year. So what happened? Let's jump into some factors to consider. And you'll see that, you know, of course, we all know unemployment happened during COVID. You'll see 26 million jobs were lost in the 5 weeks from March into April. And what happens because of that is since we have a higher unemployment, it reduces payroll taxes, which ultimately means that there's less money going into Social Security. Same thing with lower interest rates. In response to the crisis, the Federal Reserve cuts its interest rates. And then, so because of that, now that means that they're earning less interest on the Social Security Trust Fund. And for the workers that are returning to the workforce, we're seeing overall reduced wages and increased claims by the older workers to place in the current job market. So think about those that had said, hey, you know what? I'm 68 years old. I'm going to hang tight until I'm going to work, you know, I'll work till 70 when I've maximized my Social Security benefit. And then COVID hit and they got forced into retirement. They weren't planning to retire then, but they were forced to. So they ended up making claims when they weren't expecting to. And so that put even more of a strain on Social Security. So now if we look at Steve Gross, who is the chief actuary of Social Security, he said that if the negative economic effects are relatively brief, which that definition is extending through 2020 and partially into 2021, then the combined, and all this really means is there's two different portions of the trust fund. There's the portion for the retirees and the portion for the disabled. And so if those two portions of the trust fund reserve depletion might be up to 1 year earlier in 2034 rather than 2035, ultimately that means instead of that, if I go back to this slide here, instead of this happening in 2035, that actually might have brought us sooner to 2034. And that's assuming that if the economic effects only partially went into 2021, and I think you all know this statement occurred in November of last year. We've definitely gone into 2021. And he also said, history tells us that Congress has always acted to maintain payment of Social Security benefits on a timely basis since 1940. Some adjustments to scheduled tax rates and or benefit levels will undoubtedly be made in the future as in the past. So what is he saying? They're going to need to tackle it and they're going to have to do so probably somewhat soon. So that brings up the next question, which is, when is the right age to file? It's by far the most important decision of your Social Security decisions here. And you'll see that for a 65-year-old couple of average health, there's a 50% chance that one of them will live to age 93 and one in four chance that one of them will see age 97. So claiming Social Security early would lock them into smaller payouts for potentially 30 years or more. So if you don't read through all that, what they're stating is if you can wait as long as you can to claim Social Security, that's probably the better way to do that. And you're going to see here, there's a New York Times columnist that said the same thing. If you're in good health and you can afford to wait, my advice is that you should wait as long as possible. The greater is your guaranteed lifetime income, the easier it will be to organize your retirement budget, and the less you'll have to worry about living too long. And you're going to see the numbers behind this here, because I think it's important that you understand why they recommend you should try to hang in as long as you can before you touch your Social Security. So let's look at really what the benefit is worth to you or to the retiree. So we're looking at Sarah here. You'll see she has a date of birth of 1958. She is a full retirement age. You'll see that shortened to the acronym FRA, full retirement age, of 66 and 8 months. Her FRA benefit is $2,432 per month, and her life expectancy is 95. Now, if she takes the earliest that she can, which is age 62, you'll see three numbers here, 62, which is the earliest that she can, her full retirement age, which is when her benefits reach the fullest, you know, 100%, and then age 70, which is the maximum they're allowed to grow to. If she takes it at age 62, the earliest she can take, it reduces her benefit from the 2432 that she was promised down to 1411 per month. And then it's locked into that for the rest of her life. Now, ignore this lump sum for annuity column for just right now. We're going to tackle that when I get to the end of this slide here. Focus first on the total received amount. By age 80, she's received $400,000. By age 90, over $700,000. If she simply would have waited until full retirement age by age 66, her benefit goes to the 2432. By age 80, she's already at $474,000. And by age 90, nearly $1 million, $973,000 there. If she can hang tight till age 70, her benefit goes up to $3,500 a month. By age 80, it's $492,000, almost $500,000. By age 90, she's received $1.1 million during that time period. So why do we bring this up? I think there's been a movement and a trend out there for a lot of people to come to you and say, geez, you know, I'd rather take it at age 62, because if I were to have waited to age 70, that's 8 years of $1,400 per month that I could have received. And yes, that might be true, but the break-even point seems to be somewhere around like the mid-70s to roughly 80, where they would have eclipsed, if they just would have hung in there until at least age 70, they would have already eclipsed the amount of money that they received and all those 8 years of payments that they didn't receive by waiting to age 70. So it's by far worth it. If you think you're going to live to like your mid-70s or at least 80, in almost every single circumstance, you're going to be better off hanging tight until age 70. The lump sum for the annuity here, ultimately what this means is if you were to take, based on the annuity rates at the point in time of this presentation when it was created, if you were to take a lump sum, how much money would you need to be able to produce the same effect and same kind of payout for the duration of time that was shown here? So you'll see here, for the money to last to age 90, we would have needed $365,000 at age 62. Or at age 70, to give you a $3,500 payout per month, we need about $700,000. So the equivalent to you and to your clients, the equivalent benefit here is that you would effectively, you're taking $700,000 and effectively putting it back into their estate, or they're not their estate, their retirement bucket, if you will. That's the power of Social Security here. That's the value of it. I hope that made sense. Okay, so you might be thinking like, you know, gee, I wish I would have waited. You know, somebody might sit there and say, you know, I took it at 62, kind of wish I would have waited, because if you take it at age 62, it reduces your benefit by 25 to 30%, just depending on when your full retirement age was. And your full retirement age starts increasing from 66 to 60, whoops, to 67 for those born in 1955. So I think you should be aware of that now you're starting to wait a little bit longer before your full retirement age starts, which means you're reducing your benefit by that much more for those that are that are born a little bit later. Okay. So let's just say you're under your full retirement age, meaning like if your full retirement age is 65, you're under that, you've taken your Social Security and you want to now stop receiving your benefits. So let's just say, you know, you got laid off, so you decided to start taking benefits, but then you found a new job and you want to go ahead and stop those benefits. Under full retirement age, it's a little harder to do so. It is possible, but it's a little harder to do so. First, you have to do it within 12 months of turning on your Social Security income. Then you need to file a request for withdrawal of application. So you're going to request to withdraw your application for Social Security benefits. And here's the kicker. You need to repay all the benefits you received and anyone else that has received that are getting a benefit off of your record. And you need to repay all your Medicare premiums deducted from your check. So that could be a pretty substantial number. But that is what's done. Now, the cool thing is if you're at least at your full retirement age, When you get there, you now can suspend your benefit significantly easier. You simply contact Social Security and request it. That's it. There's no repayment required, but you do need to be aware that anyone that's receiving the benefit that's tied to your record, their checks are suspended too. So you stop yours, you stop everybody else's. All right, so let's look at some scenarios here. I want you to kind of get an idea of where some of these situations might make sense and so forth. All right, so we've got two people here, Archie and Edith. You know, you'll see Archie was laid off last year with the rest of the staff. You know, he was working at a golf course. He was 62 years old. There was no 401k or pension. Thankfully, Archie had a financial professional who worked with him and Edith to start contributing to their IRAs. At this time, he's 63 years old. But now at 63, he starts a Social Security in order to avoid tapping into their IRAs. Fortunately, Edith found a job. She's teaching high school calculus. And though their current income is certainly a welcome relief, Edith will not be entitled to a pension. And the additional years she works won't make up for the decades that she was a stay-at-home mom and wife. They just assumed that Archie's Social Security would be the mainstay of their retirement income. However, he locked in now to a reduced benefit because he started it early. And Archie can't withdraw his application because even if he could come up with the money to repay the benefits so far, he's been getting benefits for more than a year. Thankfully, he's got an option. So let's look into what his option is. So let's recap here. He's 66 years, or his full retirement age is 66 years old. His full retirement benefit is $1,800 a month. And it's going to adjust every single year, approximately. We don't know this number for sure, but we're going to assume by about 3%. COLA stands for cost of living adjustment. That's kind of your inflationary benefit in there. So it's going to adjust every year up by roughly 3%. That does change every year, though. So at age 62, his retirement got reduced down to $1,358 a month. And if he keeps it that way, if he doesn't do anything else, if he keeps it that way, he's going to have received by age 90 a total of $701,000. Not bad, but there are some other options that we can do. He can start it again. He started at 1358, age 62. He received a total of $66,000 during that time period, which takes him all the way to his full retirement benefit. He's now going to suspend it because now that Edith is working, they have enough money coming in. And you'll see here, he's earning DRCs. DRCs are delayed retirement credits. That's what grows the benefit a lot. And he's receiving the cost of living adjustments. So he does that. So that's the cool thing. You suspend your benefit and now it starts to grow again. By age 70 now, his benefit now has gone from $1,300 a month to $2,200 a month. He restarts the benefit at age 70. And by age 90, he's received $800,000. By you recommending a solution like that, you've taken what was $700,000 and increased it to $800,000 for the client. You found effectively an extra $100,000 for the client by making one recommendation. Okay, so now let's look at the divorced spouse situation. So you'll see we've got Liz, who's 62. She had a career of small parts in a local theater company, and she's a mother. We have Richard, who's 62, midshipman and studio head. You'll see they were high school sweethearts. They were going steady at 16. They were married at 20, but they got divorced at 32. So some background info. So before deploying to Vietnam, Richard was discharged from the Navy after mysteriously falling off the USS America. When they divorced after 12 years of marriage, there were two kids and a mortgage. Richard headed to Hollywood, where his charms resulted in a powerful professional life. Despite alimony, Liz has struggled to make ends meet while raising the kids. Her four subsequent marriages lasted from 2 to 8 years. So what are Liz's options? Okay, so recap here. Liz has been divorced 5 times now and is currently single. She is age 62, and Richard is, he's on wife number 2, also age 62. You can see their full retirement ages and their full retirement benefits. Now, some things to know here. In order to receive, a benefit on your ex-spouse, you needed to be married for at least 10 years. The maximum benefit would be 50% of the ex-spouse's full retirement benefit. Now, the earliest age to file for, now this would be a reduced benefit, but the earliest age to file is still 62, and you'll receive the higher of your own benefit or your ex-spouse's benefit. And some key concepts here. So the ex-spouse must have started Social Security or you're divorced at least 2 years. You can't get divorced and then suddenly go ahead and request the 50% from your ex. You have to have at least 2 years, or they've already had to have started Social Security. If you have more than one spouse or ex-spouse, excuse me, like Liz did here, the benefit is based on the ex with the highest benefit. And in most cases, you lose this benefit if you remarry. So if you go ahead and get remarried, all of her five exes, all of Liz's five exes, she would not be able to claim on. Okay, so is Liz eligible for a benefit based upon her own work record? Well, yeah, she would be. She works, so she has the ability to get the $800 per month. It would be a reduced benefit because she's age 62, so it'd be a little bit earlier, a little bit reduced. On how many ex-husbands is Liz eligible for a benefit? Remember, she's been divorced five times. So one person, and it's Richard. Why is it just one if she has four other exes? Well, if you recall, you need to be married at least 10 years. Richard was the only one that she was married 10 years for. Everyone else was from 2 to 8 years. Can Liz choose which benefit she wants? No, she cannot. That is chosen for her already. Now, the good news is they choose the highest one. So, you know, I don't know why you'd want a smaller amount anyway, but they choose the highest of the options. And can she receive her own reduced benefit and then switch to a 50% divorced spousal benefit at full retirement age? No, once you've taken the reduced benefit on your own, you can't switch to the divorced spousal one at that point in time. If Liz needs a larger Social Security benefit, what can she do? Well, one option is she could delay claiming until she's at full retirement age. That would give her the best benefit option there. Or she could remarry and hope that husband number six has a benefit that's larger than Richard's. Now, let's go a little further into the story here. On a sailing trip to Catalina Island with his second wife, Richard falls overboard. Richard, you don't have good luck here on ships. Hollywood's elite are devastated. Now, since he's passed, Liz has new options. Because now we're going to dive into the widow or widower benefit or the surviving divorce spouse benefit. So the earliest age to file for a widow or widower's benefit is now age 60. You don't have to wait to 62. So if you've got someone that you're working with that they've lost their spouse, they don't need to wait to 62. They can get a benefit as early as 60. Minimum length of marriage. Now, this one, it's still 10 years if they were divorced. But if they were married, it's 9 months as long as they were married at the time that he or she passed. The maximum benefit now is 100% of the deceased spouse benefit at the time of death. Now, in the instance with what if they had multiple widowed spouses, does that impact others if you're taking your benefit? The answer is no. So there can be multiple people claiming the 100% of the benefit on one person passing away. So what options now does Liz have? She has a couple. You'll see here, there's just some that are the clear winner. First is she could file for the widow's benefit at $2,155 per month, age 62, switch to her own benefit at $900 a month and let it continue to grow due to cost of living adjustments up to $1,014 per month. Not sure why she would do that, but that is an option she has. Option B, she can file for the widow's benefit at $2,155, continue it, let hers grow in the meantime, and then switch to her own benefit at age 70. And then lastly, Liz files for her own benefit at option C here is $600 a month, switch 100% to the widow's benefit at full retirement age of $2,900 a month. Now it grew due just to the fact that they waited till full retirement age. delayed retirement credits and so forth. And now, because of the cost of living adjustments, now up to $3,300 per month. Couple things to know here that the widow and surviving divorce spouse retains the ability to restrict their benefit to just the spousal amount, meaning you can just have just the spousal amount coming in instead of your own. If you outlive multiple spouses, your benefit will be based on the highest amount available. Any Social Security benefit received prior to full retirement age can be reduced by the earnings test. What does that mean? If you earn too much, so if you go back to work, if you decide to have an income coming in from work, your benefit can get reduced if you take it prior to your full retirement age. After full retirement age, you're fine. You can earn as much as you want. You'll still receive everything. And then only your own benefit earns delayed retirement credits if you postpone filing past the full retirement age. So there would be no reason to wait to switch to the widow's benefit here because they're not going to receive any delayed retirement credits. Okay, so we don't normally show this slide when we're doing this in front of a for a seminar for our clients. But I want you all to know this. So Franklin Templeton has this Social Security Optimizer where you can put in a client situation. You talk about how much money they have coming in, their Social Security benefits, what their strategies are. And you tell them like, hey, you know, this client's thinking of possibly taking it at age 62 or waiting till age 70. And it'll compare all the options and see what the best way to maximize the Social Security benefits for your client. And then it spits out a really, really nice PDF that you can show and share with your clients. It's right at the Franklin Templeton website. You can see that there. They also have a ton of different PDFs as well that you can hand to your clients that are client approved. There's Social Security questions and answers. It's a kind of look like a fact thing, a frequently asked questions. There's a brochure on are you minimizing the value of your Social Security benefits? And a popular one, you know, Social Security options for spouses, widows, and ex-spouses. It's in this nice chart format, front and back. Actually, I think there's 4 pages total there. Really, really good option. So guys, again, utilize the resources that we have just by being part of Primerica. We've got these connections with these fund companies, and they're fantastic. So the last slide that we wrap up with here is just a little kind of a recap. Now, some of these things we did cover, some of these things we didn't cover. This is one of the ones we didn't cover. But your Social Security benefit is based on how many years of earnings? And the answer is your 35 highest years of earnings. What they do is they take the amount of money that you've earned over your entire lifetime, and your annual income each year is adjusted for inflation. And then they take your 35 highest years of inflation adjusted income, and they use that to determine your monthly benefit. So next year is you must file for Medicare at age 65, even if you're still working, or your premiums will go up. That is false. Now that's partly true because for most people that is true. False, you're gonna see there's a lot of true or false answers that are still partly true. But if you have health insurance coverage that's provided by your employer that meets what they call the credible standard, and you qualify for a special enrollment period, there is no increase in your premium if you don't begin Medicare at age 65. If you owe the IRS money, they can confiscate your entire Social Security check. The answer in that one is false, but again, it's a half-truth because any agency of the federal government, they can tap into your Social Security check, but what makes it half-true is that's only up to 15% of your check that they can confiscate. So they can go after your check, but it's only a smaller amount. If your full retirement age is 66 and you delay claiming Social Security until age 70, your benefit will be about what percent higher compared to starting at age 62? The answer to that is 76%. It grows by quite a bit compared to starting at 62. A divorced spouse can get a benefit based on the earnings record of her or his ex, even if their ex has not yet filed. And that is true. If you wish you had filed sooner, you can apply today and request a lump sum payment for the amount that you would have received up to that point. False, but again, a half truth. You can request up to 6 months retroactively. So if you've got a client that that meant to file and just forgot to, they can request up to 6 months retroactively to get caught up in a lump sum payment. So again, these are things that are helpful to know, and you can give your client a little bit extra money that they weren't counting on. That number actually goes up to 12 months if the application is for a disability. So you can actually get 12 months retroactively as well. If you start disability benefits before you are at full retirement age, your benefit will be reduced. That is false. Disability benefits are based upon your primary insurance amount, which is kind of like your full retirement benefit, but they're not reduced if you receive them prior to your full retirement age. To receive a widow or widower's benefit, you have to be married to your spouse at least 9 months, which is true, assuming that you were married at the time of his or her death. So guys, that's the end of it for the Franklin Templeton portion. I hope you all appreciated that. I've always appreciated the resources that Franklin has provided on that. But again, I'm going to encourage you all, check out all the different fund companies. They each have something different that they specialize in, and you can learn a lot of stuff. So Dad, I'm going to go ahead and turn it back to you. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks. Awesome as always, Kurt. Thank you. All right. So as we wrap up the seminar, hopefully you can see my screen, is we're going to talk a little bit about asset transfer. And so before we do though, and I want to show you where the income discussion is, we call our estate solution game plan the three bucket approach. And bucket number one is really for helping them make sure they have money set aside for projects, a house, emergencies, you know, all the basics we talk to people about. Well, it becomes really important when they retire because they want to have monies available so that it doesn't hurt their retirement income, and they have to have them available because now they're not working any longer. Maybe they are part-time, but most of them aren't. And so they want to have some money for travel, perhaps. Maybe, you know, things happen on their house that have to be repaired, et cetera. Bucket number two is where we do the income inventory. And this is where we take a look at incomes that they're going to be receiving, whether it be Social Securities, of course, pensions, if they have one. And this is sometimes where you have to be an investigative reporter because, you know, some people qualified for pensions back in the 70s and 80s, and some of them forgot about it. My dad was one of them. I said, Dad, how long did you work there? He said, 7 years. I said, well, vesting back then was 5 or 7 years and sometimes 10. Why don't we call? Oh, I don't have that. Well, let's call anyway. And we did. He was only going to get like $400 a month, but hey, that was $400 a month that he didn't have previously. And so, you know, we found that for him, and we've done it to many other people. So definitely investigate, ask those kinds of questions. Did you ever work at a company where they had a pension and you may or may not have qualified for it, because these assets are sitting out there for people. I found another one for a lady and she had $86,000 in a lump sum that they were going to give her to buy out the pension. And it was sitting in the unclaimed investments or assets in Pennsylvania here. And we were able to file for it and she got a lump sum of $86,000 and was so ecstatic because she now had money she could now turn on income to help her in retirement. So again, this is where you do that inventory of income to find out what they're going to have coming in. And then, of course, bucket three, which is the protected or replenishing bucket. That's hopefully to turn on an income stream perhaps after 70 or even later, and you're protecting those assets as well. And then we wrap all of it, protecting it with long-term care insurance. We give them that opportunity as well, as well as through our PLPP program with wills, trusts, and gifting strategies. And, you know, then we talk about, because some people want to do this, they want to have a game plan to transfer assets to the next generation. So we let them know that, yeah, in the next 25 years, $68 trillion will be transferred by inheritance. And, you know, we like to go through this because, you know, we throw numbers in America around like they're nothing, like $68 trillion. Yeah, I know how much that is. So what we do in our as we're closing, we tell people about 1 million seconds of time. People can get around their head around that one. It's 11 and a half days. What's just 1 trillion seconds of time? And we tell them it's in years and just guess. And there, no one gets this. It's 32,000 years. And that it just blows them away. And then I said, now you're talking about not just 1 trillion, you're talking $68 trillion are going to transfer. And federal estate taxes, if you don't know, are due within 9 months of the second spouse's death. So you have a husband and wife, first husband dies, typical. Nothing's due from the wife. At that point, everything goes to her basically. And then upon her death and that generation's death, if you will, now within 9 months, that tax return is due. And federal estate taxes can deplete an inheritance, okay? Now, we like to give this example that these people all lost big. For example, we look at Elvis the Pelvis. When he died, I believe it was 1978, his estate was valued at $10.1 million. He lost, if you look to the right there, 73%. Now you might say, well, you know, he's a rock and roller. What does he know? Well, he had a lot of money. He could have hired someone. By the way, when we cover these losses, all these should have been zero. And you're going to see people on the next page that did it the right way, and it was zero. But it's amazing that he lost $7.3 million to the government because he didn't hire the right people. John Rockefeller Jr., he lost $17 million to the shrinkage of his estate. That's 64%. Joe Robbie, those of you who are football fans might remember, he owned a little team called the Miami Dolphins, and it was actually called Joe Robbie Stadium. He was worth almost $52 million at his passing. He lost 45, and you might say, yeah, that's 87%. Well, he's a football guy. What does he know? Again, had a lot of money, didn't hire the right people to take a look after it. Alwin Ernst, those of you familiar with accounting, he was one of the big 8 accounting firms, Ernst & Young. I wouldn't go to him because he lost 56%. He should have known better. He should have been at zero. Can't believe he did that. All right. But his heirs lost $7.1 million, 56% of their estate. Dean Witter was a financial dude, and he only lost 25%. And Walt Disney lost 29%, but they're not considering it a loss because he's frozen and hoping to make a comeback. No, just kidding. But other notable estate losers, these are not losers as people, just their estates are. But other people that did not do it the right way, Michael Jackson, Jimi Hendrix, Sonny Bono, Martin Luther King Jr., James Gandolfini, Tony Soprano, of the Tony Soprano fame, Philip Seymour Hoffman of the Hunger Games, and Prince, and one of the most recent ones, Aretha Franklin. They just didn't have things set up. They all were wealthy people and just didn't have it set up or set up the right way. So then we moved to, and then there was Steve Jobs. He appears to have protected his estate with living trusts. And this was from Forbes magazine. Somebody said he probably wrote an app. He probably did. But he preserved his estate was bigger than all the previous page combined. They estimated because when you have a trust, it's a private thing, and there's no way to know exactly what's in it unless somebody squeals. They estimate somewhere around $7 billion that got transferred. And so he did it the right way and protected his estate. Other people that did it right, Robin Williams, Liz Taylor, Joan Rivers, and Paul Walker, which Paul Walker is interesting because he's of the Fast and the Furious fame. And he was a young man when he died. And I believe he was still in his late 30s, and he had it totally set up to pass to his children and do it the right way. So really interesting to see that it matters. It matters to help people and give them the right coaching to help them to do the right thing. So now we move to what's called the unified gift credit. And the question we like to ask our clients at this point is, how much are you allowed the gift? And we usually open it up at this point, and usually you hear numbers like 10,000 you can gift or 15,000 you can gift, et cetera. And the real answer is you can gift 11.7 million per person. So a husband and wife, they can gift as of this year. It'll change January 1st of 2022, but a couple can gift 23.4 million. Now I always like to make a joke that You have to have it to gift it. You know, you can't just say, yeah, I want to gift that. Well, you have to have it to gift it. But if you can, you can gift the whole amount on any given day. You know, I have a lot. There's another question I typically get is, hey, you know, my parents' house is $300,000 and they, you know, they want to gift it to get it out of their estate and get it to the next generation. Do we have to break it into $15,000 increments? No, you can gift it all on the same day. And as long as they do the gift credit, they have to do that at tax time and file it that they made a gift against their unified gift credit. And they're fine. Nobody pays taxes on that. It's gifted intact and the right way. It's available to everyone, but you can use it now to enhance the $15,000 annual gifts. So it's part of that. But the bottom line is use it or lose it. And that's what we teach people is we're going to help you develop a game plan that's going to help you both now and later so that as we work together, that's my famous four words I like to say, as we work together, is as we work together, we're going to help you devise a game plan that works now and then. So we tell everybody that on this line, wherever you fall in age, you draw the line straight up. So let's say you're 50 years old, that everything to the left of 50, you should already be on board for. And everything to the right is coming up. And so what we find out is that most people don't even have the left side covered. As we all know, most people don't have their finances in order, sadly. Okay, but that's what happens. And so we teach people to start taking control of their financial destiny as soon as possible. So we encourage, you know, we have many different people that come to our seminars. Some of them are brand new and haven't had an FNA. So we tell them that we want them to get one. For our clients that are existing, if they haven't had one at least 2 years, they definitely need to sign up and get it redone. Learn how to manage your own financial future. That's what we want them to do. Take an active role, learn, grow, get better at it. Who cares more about your money than you? Hopefully you, but that's the key. Remember that a little can go a long way, because I get that. And it's never too early or too late to start investing. And I get that all the time. I wish I would have met you in my 20s. Guess what? If you did, you probably wouldn't have listened anyway. I tell him, I said, you're meeting me in our life journey when you're supposed to. And now is your choice. Now you have the opportunity to make an impact and do something about it. And so as we go on, we let them know about our ongoing seminar series that we do. That's funky. And our wealth strategies that you just sat through is our next one is January 24th, which what we've partnered with our Pennsylvania PLPP provider attorney. He's a great guy, Michael Fifick, and he is going to do, we just had him do estate planning for us in July, and now he's going to come back and repeat as elder care planning, and he's going to go through that on January 24th. We do How Money Works for small businesses, so I always tell the audience, if you're a small business owner, you know, you want to sign up for that, and we'll help your, you know, your team grow in terms of their finances. We'll give everybody a free financial needs analysis. And we'll do these seminars to help you with, you know, your business. We do our church program called, I've been doing this for 16 years now, called Dealing with the 90%. And we let any pastors or any, you know, elders in the room, you know, let them know that we've got these awesome programs. That pastors are great at teaching on the 10%, but they're very inept on talking about the 90%. And then the women and money, we've realized that need because, you know, most men are survived by their wife. And so at some point, if they're not controlling the money now, they will be. Our next one, we don't have the exact date set. We're looking at March. And then college planning and funding, we're actually doing this one tomorrow night at our on a webinar. And then we end it this way, and I'll close this portion of it now, and that is that we let them know that, you know, we've been talking about investing and planning for your future and everything tonight, but it would be irresponsible of us not to at least talk about what we're doing as a company with our business opportunity. And our real call to action is there are four ways that you can help solve the financial problem in America today. Number one is you can implement your own financial plan. It should be a law that everybody needs to have their own financial plan because it would tremendously help their family, at least with the right one, it would. Second, to refer others to get their financial game plan done. Of course, we take referrals, and that's how we survive. We do not advertise. It's one person helping another and telling another, and that's how we've grown for our 38 years. You can join us and be part of the solution. If you really like what we're doing, I'll talk about that on the next page. You can join us part-time, ultimately full-time. If you're tired of your current career, we'll teach you how to do it. Or if you're not, but you know others, we refer others to be part of our solution, and maybe they can join our cause and our journey. So we do need your help, though. We are expanding in our area from 3 offices to 7. That's the goal in the next 18 months. We're looking for people with high integrity, good people skills, and a strong work ethic. We'll teach you everything else. We have full training for both part-time and full-time. And the two positions that we are looking for is part-time, as well as ultimately developing vice presidents that can help us open new offices. So with that, that's the end of our seminar. What we encourage people to do then, our office staff has created a, oh, Kurt, I hope I say it the right way, Survey Monkey. And it's a survey that when they log off the webinar, that they get, thanks, Kurt. They log off the webinar and then they pop it, they, I believe that it pops up to them, and then they can let us know what areas they're interested in, how they want us to follow up with them. We ask them questions, how could we improve what we're doing? What are some ideas maybe you have for, you would like to see in webinars for the future, and you know, those kinds of things. So it's a real positive thing for that. So let me stop there. And now we're gonna transition in our last hour here. We're gonna transition into, nice shirt, Sherwin. And we're gonna transition into, because we've covered, Kurt covered all the benefits, which Kurt, phenomenal job once again, on covering those details. And I will say, we are not experts on this, but we've delved into it a lot because I think you all agree that it's some of the questions that they ask, clients ask, they want coaching. You know, if, I don't know if you know this or not, Social Security does not give very good coaching. They'll answer questions, but you have to know the questions to ask. But, you know, people are looking to their financial advisor they're looking to their financial advisor to really delve into it and help them with these kinds of decisions, these kinds of choices. So we are going to now switch over. Kurt talked about benefits. Sherwin's here to help us with, he's a recovering CPA. And he's going to talk to us a little bit because there are taxable situations, taxable concerns to think about. And he's going to share a little bit with us, and then we'll get into a couple more little things and then open up some, maybe some Q&A if we have time, and that's up to Krista. Okay, so Sherwin Ford.
Awesome, thank you very much, Dave. Appreciate it, appreciate the intro, Kurt. Great job, a lot of content to go through, but as always, you did a stellar job. Good evening again, everyone. I am going to dive into my part of the session, which is training, I should say, Social Security and taxes. In some ways, I wish I had more content to give you, but in other ways, I'm glad I don't have a lot of content because most of the issues around Social Security is really the stuff that Kurt dealt with, which is the planning around Social Security. Most people don't have a lot of questions around taxes, but there are a couple of things to pay attention to, and hopefully as I go through the evening, you will get some value. So there are really two times that we have to look at: how does it impact me today? And then when I'm ready to collect, how does it impact me then? So let's dive in. Okay, so Social Security tax today, taxable gross wages are taxed at 6.2%. Up to a maximum wage number of $142,800 for 2021. Once an employee's salary reaches that limit of $142,800, they are no longer required to pay that tax. Now, you might be saying, well, I thought it was like 7.65. Well, that's the total FICA tax, is the 7.65. The 7.65 is then broken down into the 6.2, and then the other is for Medicare. So So we're just focusing on Social Security for right now. The maximum contribution an employee will make to what Social Security for 2021 is, and I actually like doing the math because I think it's helpful for people to understand, especially those who are looking to transition into business. I need them to understand the impact of having a business and the deductions that we get as business owners that employees are not able to get. Okay, so if an employee made $142,800, multiply that by 6.2%, they will pay $8,853. And that would be the employee portion. Okay, the employer also pays at the same rate of 6.2 of an employee salary. So you have to understand when you're in a business owner situation, you know, you have to factor in into the employee compensation package the 6.2% that you have to pay as the employer, right? And so the employee, again, is not getting the max benefit of their value. We know they don't, because the employer portion of some of these taxes have to be factored in. That's another 6.2%. $142,800 times 6.2% is another $8,853.60. Self-employed individuals pay both employer and employee portions of the Social Security tax. And so let's do the math on that. On $142,800 of taxable income for a self-employed person, self-employment income, it will be $17,707.20. Now, I don't know about you, I would much rather keep as much of that money for myself, but I'm not going to go into why it is the way it is. This is the way it is. What you can do, some of the benefits, and again, this is for another class at some other time. There are lots of deductions. There are tax planning opportunities from a retirement planning standpoint that will help to reduce this number for self-employed individuals. So an employee who makes this amount, they have no choice. They have to pay it. A self-employed individual is able to reduce their self-employment income, which then reduces the overall Social Security tax portion of it. Okay, so I stole this slide from Kurt. This is a slide from Franklin Templeton. I think it sort of helps to understand how income is computed, because if you know anything about taxes or the government, they like to make things complicated unnecessarily, right? So when you think of income for the purposes of calculating Social Security, it's not simple, unfortunately, right? So it's your adjusted gross income, and most people can find that on your tax return. You look at page one or page two of your 1040, and you'll be able to find the adjusted gross income line. It's that number plus any municipal bond interest. Typically, municipal bond interest is not taxable for federal income tax purposes, but for Social Security and the computation there, and they're going to add it back. So adjusted gross income plus municipal bond interest plus half of your Social Security benefits. And that number is called your combined income, okay? Your combined income is then going to be used for individuals as well as married couples to determine what portion of your Social Security is actually going to be taxed, okay? And so we'll sort of get to this as we go through, but not 100% of your Social Security income is taxable. It gets up to a certain number, and we'll talk through that. So for an individual, 25 to 34,000. For a married couple, it's 32,000 to 44,000. And if you're in between those numbers, 25,000 to 34,000, married, filing joint, 32 to 44, 50% of the benefit is taxed. If you're over 34,000 in combined income, for the individual, the married filing joint over 44,000, up to 85% of the benefit that you receive will then be taxed. This is another picture that I got from an Investopedia that I thought was sort of helpful, because some of you are like, well, individuals, how about head of household or qualified widower? So I thought it was sort of all encompassing of the different taxpayer types. And so if you're single, head of household, qualified widower, married filing separately, all of those fall into the same bucket. Below 25,000, all Social Security income is tax-free. So if your combined income, from this is below 25,000, all Social Security income is tax-free. 25 to 34, up to 50% of your Social Security income may be taxable. And then more than 34,000, up to 85% of Social Security may be taxable. So one thing to note, it is possible to have a 0% of your Social Security benefit as taxable. The highest percentage of your Social Security benefit that will be taxed, that can be taxed, is 85%. So will not go above 85%. Just know at most it's 85%. Married filing joint, again, below 32,000. Social Security income is tax-free, 32 to 44, 50%, and then more than 44,000. It's up to 85% of Social Security may be taxable. One of the reasons why I don't think there's a whole lot to this, guys and gals, is because most of these computations, most of us who file tax returns, or if you give this stuff to an accountant, or if your client works with accountants, their software system does all the math for you, okay? And so you just, like, you don't have to memorize this stuff, just know for most people, they just wanna know, is 100% of my Social Security income gonna be taxed? Just remember that 85% number. The answer is no, only, or I should say up to 85%. And then if they fall into one of those buckets, it'll either be 50% or none of it is taxed at all. A couple other items to note as I wrap up my time here. What about when the Social Security Administration provides a lump sum, call it back pay, back benefits from a previous year in the current year? For example, the lump sum was from months October, November, and December of 2020. The lump sum payout was received in March of 2021. So it should, the benefit was earned in 2020, but because of the backlog and stuff at the Social Security Administration, they don't make that payment. They don't see that file and process that payment until 2021. So normally for tax purposes, there's this thing called constructive receipt, meaning when it is received in your hands is when it's counted as income, okay? For this purpose, however, this could be very burdensome to some people because believe it or not, I use 3 months here, October, November, and December, but there are some people, because of the backlog, they sometimes have to wait up to a year, if not more. And so imagine that payout of Social Security when they actually receive it, okay? And so we'll look at this example because that could be a concern of yours coming up. So one of the questions is, do I have to file an amended tax return for 2020? The answer is no, okay? You don't have to go back to your accountant. You don't have to file that amended tax return. The next question might be, do I have to report the income? Good try, but yes, you have to report it. Because the Social Security Administration will provide a form that a copy of it, right, goes to the taxpayer, a copy of it goes to the IRS. So you won't be able to get away with not reporting the income. It's a good try though, right? The Social Security Administration sends out a form SSA-1099 that should reflect any monies received from prior years. And so, again, this is not something that you have to work through. This is something that your accountant will be working through. They'll be following that form. And then what will happen is whatever benefit was received in a prior year, they'll use, there's a form, there's a couple different forms in your 1040 for the current year that will work through some of the computations to figure out what the actual tax is. And so there's another question that I know will probably pop up as a result of this. I tried my best to answer them all. Let's go through it. You can handle any back pay on your current year tax return, like I just described, see your accountant, with no need to go back to prior years. You don't need to amend anything in the prior years, because you're going to treat the back pay as if it was received in prior years on your tax return. The lump sum will not increase your current year taxable income. So if I were to go back to my example of months, October, November, and December of 2020, being received in March of 2021, someone might be thinking, oh my gosh, this is going to increase my income for 2021. You know, I'm going to be in the next tax bracket. Well, the answer is no. Because of the way that your current year tax return is going to be prepared, you'll only be taxed on the income earned and received in 2021 in this example. Okay, you can choose to withhold federal taxes from your Social Security income. I know that I've had clients in the past that have said, hey, you know what, like my Social Security income is causing me to owe every single year. Is there some way that we can make an adjustment? Again, I would see your accountant when completing, but the form is form W-4V, W-4V. You can just Google it. You'll see the form and they can fill it out. And what will happen is they can choose a dollar amount. I'm not sure if they could choose a percentage, but anyway, just go to that form and you'll be able to see how they can fill it out to then determine what dollar amount or percentage that they will use. I would suggest strongly, please send your clients to their accountants to figure this stuff out. We are not an accounting firm. Allow the accountants to sort of do this math for them. You can obviously make a recommendation, but make sure that it's their accountant that's the one making the final call there. All right, Dave, so that's what I got. Hopefully that was helpful. I'll turn it back over to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, thank you, Sherwin, for covering that. It's a hard topic. You know, we get asked tax questions all the time. And, you know, we need to be able to steer them the right way. And your advice that we are not accountants, we are not attorneys. So we definitely need to. And I did, you know, most of the provider attorneys for our legal protection program, they want to help. So if you haven't reached out, you and your RVP, or if you are the RVP, reach out to them. They'd be happy to help. And our guy's even helping us run some of these seminars. He loves that he loves Primerica. He loves that we take an educational approach. I don't know if accountants love Primerica, but maybe they need to. I know one that does. But thanks, Sherwin, for helping us out tonight. All right. And then as we wrap up our portion before we go to Q&A, I just want to say that, you know, I'm going to do one more slide for y'all. Just a couple notables to think about. The widower benefit begins at age 60. And, you know, that can be a challenge, especially when the average age of a widow is now 57. So she's 3 years shy of age 60, and that does happen. I had a 64-year-old gentleman who was already on Social Security and just retiring. He started retiring in January, and unfortunately, he died in May. And, you know, at that point, normally, the spouse would just start receiving the benefit. Unfortunately, she was 54 years old. So thankfully, he had a good savings program, and we were able to set up a retirement benefit starting at 54 for her. And then when she did turn 60, she's now 62. At 60, we turned on the widow benefit, and that was able to now supplement, so I didn't have to take as much money out of her retirement savings. And now we've extended her benefits, so through retirement, she's going to be fine for life. That was a good story, but it did stop her from getting Social Security benefits because she was only 54 when he passed away. And that does happen. Okay. Second, remember the years of marriage rule. Okay. The 10 years, that's a key one. If they were divorced, if they were married at least 10 years, sadly, I ran into somebody who was married 9 years and 9 months and didn't know this rule. And I didn't know her at the time. So it's like, oh, that's a shame. You know, I can't do anything about it. But, you know, it's got to be that 10 years. But boy, that can really change someone to where they get a good benefit. And if you didn't think of this, it does not change the person whose numbers the divorced woman or husband, doesn't matter who it is, but it doesn't change that person's benefit. In other words, they'll still get their full benefit. If somebody's claiming against them, that does not affect them at all. Okay. And then remember, half of the qualified spouse rule. Because I hear ladies that said, I was a stay-at-home mom and I never qualified for benefits. So I don't get Social Security. And that's not true. They get half of the qualified spouse. And so, you know, the husband, he's, if he was the working spouse in this example, it was an example I'm giving you. And, you know, he had just retired and turned on his Social Security. And, you know, we're meeting with them and she goes, well, I don't get it. I said, what do you mean you don't get it? You get half. She goes, what? And they weren't even counting on that in their planning. And I did, but they never really, I guess they didn't read it well enough. So I was able to, say, you're going to have even more for your budget now. So you're in a, you know, win-win situation. So, you know, don't let somebody tell you. Now, one situation that does change is this one. You have to have 40 quarters or 10 years of work to qualify for Social Security benefits and Medicare benefits too. I ran into a pastor, and this is often a big time thing with pastors, is they opted out of Social Security for their pastoring job. And he said, boy, I really regret that. And a lot of them do because they didn't do savings on their own, sadly enough. So it sounded like a good idea at the time. Well, unbeknownst to him, I said, well, let's just look. Look, it never hurts to look. I had him sign on a Social Security and look at his benefits page, and it currently said zero. However, because he had speaking engagements over the years, he actually got income for 9 years and 9 months. And so I said, listen, if you go get 3 more months of work income, I said, do you have any speaking engagements? And he goes, no, I kind of gave that up. I said, then go down for the summer and work at Redner's for 3 months so you qualify. It didn't give him any benefit for Social Security. It was just he didn't have enough income in there to really benefit him. But what it did do is he qualified for Medicare, which was huge for them as they moved into retirement. So anyway, just letting you know, there's just a couple, you know, it's just things you pick up over time that hopefully tonight helped you. Kurt, thank you so much for your benefit discussion and Sherwin for your tax discussion. And so Kristen, we can open it up at this point if you have any questions for us and then kind of go from there.
Yeah, you guys did such a great job. There is one question here. Ronald's asking, what about people who say, I'm going to take my Social Security now because I might die tomorrow?
Yeah, so that is one that we get frequently when it comes to Social Security, because the thought process is, you know, I want to get as much out of Social Security as I can. So if I'm going to die in a year, tomorrow, whenever it is, I might as well take as much as I can. Unfortunately, it's thinking that's more short-sighted, because the problem is the people that are left behind. So for example, if you've got husband and wife, where husband's the bullheaded one that says, hey, you know, I'd like to just take as much as I can now, and I just want to take it today, and they lock in a low reduced benefit. When he passes, even if it is in a year, Now, the what's left behind is the government will allow you to keep one of the two benefits, and it's the higher of the two. But if you've locked in a low benefit now for the rest of their life, that means now the spouse is locked into a low benefit for the rest of their life. And that might potentially ruin a financial situation. So, you know, you certainly could do that, but it's not wise planning with that. So, but that is a comment that we do get somewhat frequently.
And Kristen, I'll add to that, that, you know, a lot of times husband and wife in today's world make the same amount of money. And if they do, that's wonderful. And if they want to do it at 62, go for it, you know, because a lot of people say, hey, but if the break even is like 78, that I should have waited, I'd rather live life big 62 to 78 than wait. And, you know, we'll see what happens after that, you know. And so it's really a personal decision. Our job is to listen to them and give them the best guidance that we can and go from there, because they're getting hit. I mean, if you Google it, I mean, you know, Google's always right. If you Google it, you know, you'll find that there's so many conflicting, and it really comes down to personal choice. And you know what? It's about building a family philosophy. And what do you really want out of life, and how do you want to do it?
Great answers. Okay, Michelle's asking, for the 60-year-old widow, is she stuck with that amount, or can she get that now and more at full retirement age? If no, wouldn't it be in her best interest to wait until full retirement age?
Good question. So we get this one a lot too, especially when it's a widow situation. Just so you guys know, Social Security will run a side-by-side comparison. You have to ask for it. But I tell all my widows, don't call in, don't do anything. Set an appointment with Social Security. It's a pain in the butt, but it's worth it. Go in, sit down with them, and they will run the widow's benefit side by side with their own benefit. And it'll be very clear which one's the best one, either to stay with the widow's benefit, or because they aren't touching their own, let their own continue to build till 70, and then they can switch over to their own. So it's a really good question. And the best way to answer it is tell them you'll be able to go get a side by side comparison. Ask for it, they'll give it to you, and then bring it into me. We'll sit down with it, we'll review it to see what makes the most sense.
If I can jump in on that, I believe the Franklin Templeton Social Security calculator actually is able to pull some of that data and provide charts and everything that we can then use to provide to that client, so that they can see their break even. Points on, you know, everything. And so yes, they can take it in and they should, but we can also provide a nice charted illustration to provide them with the information that they're looking for.
Cool. Thanks, Sharla.
Awesome. Here's a question in the chat. Why wouldn't you take it at 62 and invest it until you need it if you're taking it early?
So you certainly have that right. There's a couple issues with that though. First off, your return from Social Security is guaranteed. As long as you're not dead, you're gonna continue getting delayed retirement credits. And so while absolutely, you know, if you believe in the power of the market, it could certainly pay off for you, but you have no guarantees for that. And versus Social Security would be a guaranteed payoff. So that certainly is a strategy you could go with, but if you do that, just be aware there are no guarantees with that strategy.
That makes sense. And I think I've heard Roy's podcast and heard him say before, for people that don't need their Social Security, they take it and they can invest it, like take it today and invest it.
Yep.
I think that's his school of thought. Here's a question about teachers. What about a teacher and their spouses? Teachers don't get Social Security, and the spouse works and qualifies. Does a teacher get half of their spouse's Social Security if they've been married over 10 years?
That's a good question. I don't know that one. I didn't know teachers didn't get Social Security. I thought they did.
Yeah, I mean, that might be a state thing. I was going to say maybe it's a state thing, but yeah, I'm pretty positive, at least in Pennsylvania here where we are, they do. But either way, they could get half of their spouse's Social Security, though. That's the benefit of the spousal benefit. The point behind the spousal benefit really was for, you know, back in the era when, you know, when stay-at-home moms were the prevalent thing, it gave that the stay-at-home mom the ability to receive an income. So yes, even if they don't get that, they could receive a spousal benefit at a minimum.
Okay, awesome. Here's another question. Do the DOL suitability issues affect the conversation about Social Security in any way?
I don't believe so. The DOL is really, it's more driven on the retirement programs and things like that, but those are for qualified plans. Those don't have anything to do with the government plans.
Okay. Fair enough. Michelle is asking, but if you are taking your husband's Social Security, you can only earn a certain amount a year, correct? I think it's 17,000. Asking because I recently lost my husband, but I am aiming to make 17,000 a month, not a year.
If I can answer that, Michelle, if your goal is to make 17 a month and not a year, then you shouldn't care. Go make 17 a month.
Amen.
That's right. Okay. Anthony's asking if someone was married to more than one spouse, both for more than 10 years, how do the benefits work? Would both ex-spouses get benefits?
Yeah. So, both ex-spouses would get benefits. They don't have any tie in to each other. So both exes don't affect each other. They both can get their full benefits. As long as they've met the 10-year requirement, they can claim as they would like.
And it doesn't affect the person who their ex that they're banking off of. It doesn't hurt them at all either. They don't even know in a lot of cases that somebody filed against it.
Nope.
Okay, here is a question from the chat. So if a widower is retiring from her job and 67, full retirement age, she can collect her pension, $2,200, and dead spouse's $1,350 Social Security, which is higher than her benefit, which is $800, without any reduction in benefits. I guess they just want clarification.
Yes, that's true. I mean, they can get the $1,300 if it's bigger than their own. And that was their spouse's, their passed away spouse. Yes, they would want to do that, get the extra higher amount plus their pension. And now they got $3,500 a month to live on. It's a lot better situation.
Cool. Dave, Samantha is asking, which Primerica presentation do you use for your small business seminar?
So we use Chris Royce's, which is financial wellness, which is in POL. And that's a great presentation. They've got several in there on different topics and they're all approved by the company.
Awesome. Well, do any of you know what is the Social Security equivalent in Canada?
Oh, I don't know. Let's talk to the Canadian on the call here. Sherwin. Do you know?
I live in Canada for a little bit, but I do not.
Okay.
Somebody did comment and say there's a CPP plan, a Canada pension plan. If I'm reading that correctly, I don't know if that was a response to that, but
that would be the Social Security equivalent. There's a Canada pension plan and the OAS, the old age, that kicks in at a different age. That works like the Social Security over here. How it works, I don't know.
Cool. Okay, Kurt, I think this one's for you. This is from William. He says, based on the answer for number five on the last slide of the Franklin presentation, I thought the ex-spouse could only receive a benefit if the ex had been drawing Social Security for 2 years.
Yes. So number five here, and then this screen's also up too for those. I saw a couple of things in here that wanted this slide up again. So hopefully you can get your notes or pictures. But so answer question number five, a divorced spouse can get a benefit based upon the earnings record of her or his ex, even if the ex is not filed. This is true. And the question that was asked by Billy was, I thought the ex could only receive a benefit if the ex had been drawing Social Security for 2 years. You're close. I can see why that got confusing. They just have to be divorced for 2 years. They don't need to be, the person doesn't need to have filed at all. They just have to be divorced for 2 years. So I can see where the 2 year thing got confusing, but yeah, they can file that. They don't have to be filed yet. They just need to be divorced at least 2 years for that to happen.
Okay, awesome. I think that is all of the questions that came through. Oh, and everybody that's asking, we will post these slides on the Sales Team Pro Training Center with this replay probably Tuesday of this coming week. And then when Dave and Kurt and Sherwin send them to me tonight, I'll also post them in the Telegram, the Sales Team Pro Telegram.
Okay.
So if you guys want to close it out, great talk tonight. Awesome. Sure. Job.
And one thing I will say, Kristen, you might have seen my comment that I made already, the church program that people are asking about. I've gotten a lot of questions on that, and I'm actually working. I talked to Roy about it, so we're going to talk again tomorrow morning about it. So we'll keep everybody posted on that and see what we can, you know, make available on how to do that. So, but other than that, thank you all for listening tonight. Have a great night. Take care.